Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. And I start with a quote this morning by H.L. Mencken. As democracy is perfected, the office of the president represents more and more closely the inner soul of the people. On some great and glorious day, the plain folks of the land will reach their heart's desire at last, and the White House will be occupied by a downright fool and complete narcissistic moron. And by Lee Miller, another quote, we might just suffer a cruel lesson rather than a deadly reality. The world has changed in a day. Its repercussions will be felt for a century, perhaps slowly or impatiently. But it is now tilting downslope into a darkness reminiscent of civil wars, inquisitions, and barbarous despotism. Like time and space is theorized to be, the election of Donald Trump as President of the United States might be considered emergent phenomena. From the darkest malignancies of perceived psychosis, fundamentally capable of perpetrating horrible inhumanities, which are, after all, particularly human, however monstrous or savage. Trump and his alt-right cabal are predators of an atavistic kind, despite veils of simplistic frontier pieties and righteousness, and they will soon have hands on the grotesquely destructive forces concocted by humanity in its short, bitter existence on this planet. Their emergent phenomena seems predestined by the earlier Republican presidencies of Nixon, Reagan-Bush, and Bush-Cheney that softened up the constitutional process for Trump and his Morlocks to rape, pillage, and plunder. Though disgraced, the Nixonians prepared the way for Reaganomics and the Bush II holy oil wars, the onerous ideology of rich over poor, and the relentless torment of the poor for being poor. This is the Republican Revolution. Alexander Hamilton trumps Thomas Jefferson, the essential and eternal struggle of American democracy. Plutocratic aristocracy versus equality and liberty. A belief in the manifest destiny of the United States to be the ruling power over the world. The Trump World Order. The so-called populist neoconservative ideology just elected under the guise of democracy is similar to the National Socialism which immediately destroyed German democracy in the 1930s. Trump and his associates are not unlike the Hitler regime that once it got power, it had to race to control everything before anyone could recover or gain enough strength to successfully resist them. Under the Trump regime, our truly revolutionary ancestors would undoubtedly be barred access to the country they founded, yet former Tories would occupy government. The United States is perilously close to losing its most basic fundamental, one which underlies and sustains free thought and open debate, the public agreement to disagree. We are losing our civility, replacing it with intolerance, hysteria, and threatened fratricide. It seems we are more fractious and divisive than since the beginning of the Civil War. Our argument is still the same, race and gender, framed in terms of wealth. The singularity issue is disparity of wealth, which complicates and corrupts every other issue. The alt-white supremacist manosphere is determined to start a second civil war, but their obsessive conservatism is fueled by shadowy fat cat autocrats who covertly support their bitter misogyny. It is the ultra-wealthy whose affluence is to a large degree based on the work and taxes of the working poor and middle class, the incessantly impoverished, who are the real revolutionaries because they are the source of the dissolution of the society that indulges their insatiable and arrogant avarice. During the Cold War with Russia, capitalism was espoused as indistinguishable from democracy. But since the collapse of communism, the ancient antipathy of class has accelerated until the only real parties in this country are the rich party and the poor party. the new world financial order the nation's regal plutocrats are currently designing in the guise of democracy is a direct schism between the affluent and everybody else, domestically and globally. So whose democracy is it? Bernie Sanders has an answer, which he wrote more than a decade ago. If democracy is going to survive in this country, he wrote, tens of millions of poor and working people are going to have to see the connection between their economic condition and the political process. They must vote not for the lesser of two evils, but for jobs, income, health care, and the dignity to which they as human beings are entitled. Only when that occurs will American democracy become revitalized. And that was Bernie Sanders. Democrats are doing some rather subterranean soul-searching since losing last week's election, which might have been more beneficial somewhat earlier. So today I will read a couple of articles that splash cold water onto the bathos of finger-pointing losers, if I may borrow a favorite expression of our new president-elect. And afterward, an interesting comment by an Astoria citizen contemplating the Trumpian future. I begin with an article by Robert Reich. Democrats once represented the working class, not anymore. What has happened in America should not be seen as a victory for hatefulness over decency. It is more accurately understood as a repudiation of the American power structure. At the core of that structure are the political leaders of both parties, their political operatives and fundraisers, the major media centered in New York and Washington, D.C., the country's biggest corporations, their top executives, and Washington lobbyists and trade associations, the biggest Wall Street banks, their top officers, traders, hedge fund and private equity managers, and their lackeys in Washington, and the wealthy individuals who invest directly in politics. At the start of the 2016 election cycle, this power structure proclaimed Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush shoe-ins for the nominations of the Democratic and Republican parties. After all, both of these individuals had deep bases of funders, well-established networks of political insiders, experienced political advisors, and all the political name recognition anyone could possibly want. But a funny thing happened on the way to the White House. The presidency was won by Donald Trump, who made his fortune marketing office towers and casinos, and more recently, starring in a popular reality television program, and who has never held elective office or had anything to do with the Republican Party. Hillary Clinton narrowly won the popular vote, but not enough of the states and their electors to secure a victory. Hillary Clinton's defeat is all the more remarkable in that her campaign vastly outspent the Trump campaign on television and radio advertisements and get-out-the-vote efforts. Moreover, her campaign had the support in the general election of not only the kingpins of the Democratic Party, but also many leading Republicans, including most of the politically active denizens of Wall Street and the top executives of America's largest corporations, and even former President George H.W. Bush. Her campaign team was run by seasoned professionals who knew the ropes. She had the visible and forceful backing of Barack Obama, whose popularity has soared in recent months, and his popular wife, Michelle. And of course, she had her husband, Bill. Trump, by contrast, was shunned by the power structure. Mitt Romney, the Republican presidential candidate in 2012, actively worked against Trump's nomination. Many senior Republicans refused to endorse him or even give him their support. The Republican National Committee did not raise money for Trump to the extent it had for other Republican candidates for president. What happened? There had been hints of the political earthquake to come. Trump had won the Republican primaries, after all. More tellingly, Clinton had been challenged in the Democratic primaries by the unlikeliest of candidates, a 74-year-old Jewish senator from Vermont who described himself as a democratic socialist and who was not even a Democrat. Bernie Sanders went on to win 22 states and 47% of the vote in those primaries. Sanders' major theme was that the country's political and economic system was rigged in favor of big corporations, Wall Street, and the very wealthy. The power structure of America wrote off Sanders as an aberration, and until recently did not take Trump seriously. A respected political insider recently told me most Americans were largely content with the status quo. The economy is in good shape, he said. Most Americans are better off than they have been in years. Recent economic indicators may be up, but those indicators don't represent the insecurity most Americans continue to feel, nor the seeming arbitrariness and unfairness they experience. Nor do the major indicators show the linkages many Americans see between wealth and power, stagnant or declining real wages, soaring CEO pay, and the undermining of democracy by big money. Median family income is lower now than it was 16 years ago, adjusted for inflation. Workers without college degrees, the old working class, have fallen furthest. Meanwhile, most economic gains have gone to the top. These gains have translated into political power to elicit bank bailouts, corporate subsidies, special tax loopholes, favorable trade deals, and increasing market power without interference by anti-monopoly enforcement, all of which have further reduced wages and pulled up profits. Wealth, power, and crony capitalism fit together. Americans know a takeover has occurred, and they blame the establishment for it. The Democratic Party once represented the working class, but over the last three decades, the party has been taken over by Washington-based fundraisers, political analysts, and pollsters who have focused instead on raising campaign money from corporate and Wall Street executives and getting votes from upper-middle-class households in swing suburbs. Democrats have occupied the White House for 16 of the last 24 years, and for four of those years had control of both houses of Congress. But in that time, they failed to reverse the decline in working class wages and economic security. Both Bill Clinton and Barack Obama ardently pushed for free trade agreements without providing for millions of blue-collar workers who thereby lost their jobs and means of getting new ones that paid at least as well. They stood by as corporations hammered trade unions, the backbone of the white working class, failing to reform labor laws to impose meaningful penalties on companies that violate them or help workers from unions with simple up or down votes. Partly as a result, union membership shrank from 22% of all workers when Bill Clinton was elected president to less than 12% today, and the working class lost bargaining leverage to get a share of the economy's gains. Bill Clinton and Obama also allowed antitrust enforcement to ossify, with the result that large corporations have grown far larger and major industries more concentrated. The unsurprising result of this combination, more trade, declining unionization, and more industry concentration, has been to shift political and economic power to big corporations and the wealthy and to shaft the working class. This created an opening for Donald Trump's authoritarian demagoguery and his presidency. Now Americans have rebelled by supporting someone who wants to fortify America against foreigners as well as foreign-made goods. The power structure understandably fears that Trump's isolationism will stymie economic growth. But most Americans could care less about growth because for years they have received few of its benefits while suffering most of its burdens in the forms of lost jobs and lower wages. The power structure is shocked by the outcome of the 26th election because it has cut itself off from the lives of most Americans. Perhaps it also doesn't wish to understand, because that would mean acknowledging its role in enabling the presidency of Donald Trump. And that was by Robert Reich. Democrats once represented the working class, not anymore. And he is a political commentator, economist, professor, and former Secretary of Labor under Bill Clinton, and most recently author of Saving Capitalism for the Many, Not the Few. He wrote this article for The Guardian. And now, by Naomi Klein. It was the Democrats' embrace of neoliberalism that won it for Trump. They will blame James Comey and the FBI. They will blame voter suppression and racism. They will blame Bernie Sanders or bust and misogyny. They will blame third parties and independent candidates. They will blame the corporate media for giving Trump the platform, social media for being a bullhorn, and WikiLeaks for airing the laundry. but this leaves out the force most responsible for creating the nightmare in which we now find ourselves wide awake, neoliberalism. That worldview, fully embodied by Hillary Clinton and her machine, is no match for Trump-style extremism. The decision to run one against the other is what sealed our fate. If we learn nothing else, can we please learn from that mistake? Here is what we need to understand. A hell of a lot of people are in pain. Under neoliberal policies of deregulation, privatization, austerity, and corporate trade, their living standards have declined precipitously. They have lost jobs. They have lost pensions. They have lost much of the safety net that used to make these losses less frightening. They see a future for their kids even worse than their precarious present. At the same time, they have witnessed the rise of the Davos class, a hyper-connected network of banking and tech billionaires, elected leaders who are awfully cozy with those interests, and Hollywood celebrities who make the whole thing unbearably glamorous. Success is a party to which the people were not invited, and they know in their hearts that this rising wealth and power is somehow directly connected to their growing debts and powerlessness. For the people who saw security and status as their birthright, and that means white men most of all, these losses are unbearable. Donald Trump speaks directly to that pain. The Brexit campaign spoke to that pain. So do all the rising far-right parties in Europe. They answer it with nostalgic nationalism and anger at remote economic bureaucracies, whether Washington, the North American Free Trade Agreement, the World Trade Organization, or the European Union. And of course, they answer it by bashing immigrants and people of color, vilifying Muslims and degrading women. Elite neoliberalism has nothing to offer that pain because neoliberalism unleashed the Davos class. People such as Hillary and Bill Clinton are the toast of the Davos Party. In truth, they threw the party. Trump's message was, all is hell. Clinton answered, all is well. But it's not well. Far from it. We know from the 1930s is that what it takes to do battle with fascism is a real left. A good chunk of Trump's support could be peeled away if there were a genuine redistributive agenda on the table. An agenda to take on the billionaire class with more than rhetoric and use the money for a Green New Deal. Such a plan could create a tidal wave of well-paying unionized jobs, bring badly needed resources and opportunities to communities of color, and insist that polluters should pay for workers to be retrained and fully included in this future. It could fashion policies that fight institutionalized racism, economic inequality, and climate change at the same time. It could take on bad trade deals and police violence and honor indigenous people as the original protectors of the land, water, and air. People have a right to be angry, and a powerful, intersectional left agenda can direct that anger where it belongs, while fighting for holistic solutions that will bring a frayed society together. Such a coalition is possible. In Canada, we have begun to cobble it together under the banner of a people's agenda called the LEAP Manifesto, endorsed by more than 220 organizations, from Greenpeace Canada to Black Lives Matter Toronto and some of our largest trade unions. Bernie Sanders' amazing campaign went a long way towards building this sort of coalition and demonstrated that the appetite for democratic socialism is out there. But early on, there was a failure in the campaign to connect with older Black and Latino voters who were the demographic most abused by our current economic model. That failure prevented the campaign from reaching its full potential. Those mistakes can be corrected, and a bold, transformative coalition is there to be built on. That is the task ahead. The Democratic Party needs to be either decisively wrested from pro-corporate neoliberals, or it needs to be abandoned. From Elizabeth Warren to Nina Turner to the Occupy alumni who took the Bernie campaign supernova, there is a stronger field of coalition inspiring progressive leaders out there than at any point in my lifetime. We are leaderful, as many in the movement for Black Lives say. So let's get out of shock as fast as we can and build the kind of radical movement that has a genuine answer to the hate and fear represented by the Trumps of this world. Let's set aside whatever is keeping us apart and start right now. And that was, it was the Democrats' embrace of neoliberalism that won it for Trump, by Naomi Klein. She is a Canadian author, social activist, and filmmaker known for her political analyses and criticism of corporate globalization and of corporate capitalism. She is a member of the board of directors of the climate activist group 350.org, and most recently author of This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. She wrote this article for The Guardian, which, like public media, needs public support. And now, Faustian Bargain by Michael Miller, aka Sasha. He wrote this as a letter to the Daily Astorian, and he lives in Astoria. I was certain Trump could not get elected. Such appalling errors in judgment have in the past launched me into crises where I question my views on everything. After all, if one of my certainties was in error, why not another or all? I'm in no mood for crisis, for doubt or fear. There shall be enough of that without me. I feel for people who have turned to Trump as their savior. I empathize with their plight, a culture that has rapidly moved away from what is familiar to them. They have suffered, too, as we all have, in the emerging oligarchy, and they have been constantly demeaned, ridiculed, and mocked in popular culture, in the traditional and social media, and by family, friends, and community members. Now they have made their Faustian bargain. Some lessons people choose to learn the hard way, and it will be very hard. I don't know how long it will take for the negatives of this bargain to trickle down to our little community. And in that community, where I am so small, how much longer to affect me? I know it's not about me, and that is something I wish people had remembered when they went to the polls, to vote for the common good, not selfish interest. But there is an enormous amount of good out there. There are a lot of kind and courageous people of all ethnicities, religions, sexual identities, and beliefs, whom I must believe will still rule the day and whose children will live the dream. Winter's coming, but one thing we know on the coast, it has rained before. And that was Faustian Bargain by Sasha Miller of Astoria. And a bit of an epilogue by myself. The day after the presidential election, a secession petition, which had earlier been filed and withdrawn, was once again filed with the Oregon Secretary of State and then withdrawn a second time as a result of threats and the violence of protests in Portland against Trump. Secession ideas are nothing new to Oregon or the Northwest, which have had a succession of secession schemes. The most famous and long-lasting, at least in memory and pantomime, is the Free State of Jefferson down around the Oregon-California border. Then there is the recurring idea of Cascadia, which would essentially encompass the northern part of California, the western parts of Oregon and Washington, and also British Columbia, and would obviously include the Cascade Mountain Range. And Ecotopia, from the books by the late Ernest Kallenbach, which is often incorporated into the Cascadia independent movement. And of course, the always popular James G. Blaine Society, which was not so much dedicated to secession as it was to keep people out of Oregon to avoid overpopulation and despoilation of natural resources. Visit but don't stay was its famous motto. And as a parting shot, which I must disclaim as my point of view, the same as my introduction to this program, and perhaps my point of view only, anywhere. Those who had the chance to vote, who were not obstructed but simply did not vote, especially if the Trump presidency turns out to be the dire prospect it very well might be, and virtually annihilate the remaining vestiges of democracy, well, damn you. And a special damnation for those deluded wretches who voted or did not vote simply to refuse a woman the presidency. you in particular will deserve what we are all about to receive. If ordinary people truly desire to prevent history descending into a black hole, which extreme Christians call the rapture, they must eliminate the patent hypocrisy of democracy and restructure its real purpose of liberating common folk rather than nominally acquiescing to the despotic triad of plutocracy, theocracy, and militocracy, which includes racism, misogyny, and homophobia. The rabidly militaristic theocrats worship the rich at the top and punish the poor at the bottom. All the ungodly things they do in the name of God. I would like to end with a couple of poems by Bill Burton. He was a poet and merchant marine. He died 15 years ago in Astoria in December 2001. The party is over. All credit cards nationally canceled. America's Elm Street shades are drawn. Women and children under pastel bedding lie stunned before TV static and snow. Manly beer bellies soured and gaseous. The boneheads under hard hats are crushed as military industrials foreclose on the land. Now matriarchal scout cookies are crumbled, the air let out from all our balloons. And all animals in chorus. There never was a plan more suitable for man than going to the moon. May you all leave soon. And those were by Bill Burton. And this has been Michael McCusker.